Welcome to this week's edition of Radioactive Magazine on KKFI 90.1 FM, Kansas City Community Radio, with your host, Dave Mitchell. The following statement is my own, with input from no one else. Election boards across the U.S. have been processing absentee ballots for decades, and quality control measures are well established. What's different in 2020 is the sheer volume of absentee ballots necessitated by our COVID-19 pandemic. On September 24, 2020, the Trump-appointed FBI Director Christopher Wray testified to the Senate Homeland Security Committee under oath, and I quote, "We have not seen historically any kind of coordinated national voter fraud in a major election, whether it's by mail or otherwise. Five U.S. states conduct their elections by mail-in vote, including Colorado and Oregon. Data from the Heritage Foundation, a conservative think tank, indicates only 14 fraud cases out of over 15,955,000 votes cast from 2005 to 2018 in Colorado. Colorado has had mail-in voting since 2013, and in 2020, three Republicans have been sent to the U.S. House by overwhelming margins. Oregon has had mail-in voting since 1998, and from 2000 to 2019, only 14 fraud cases occurred out of over 15,476,000 votes cast. Due to our COVID-19 pandemic becoming politicized, many Republicans have minimized the dangers. In higher numbers, generally, Democrats have used absentee ballots more frequently, with more Republicans willing to vote in person. There is no fraud related to this circumstance. State laws vary widely as to when their election boards can begin counting absentee ballots. Not all election boards have the luxury of counting those ballots ahead of time, including in Pennsylvania, where that state law mandates the beginning of this count on election day. Obviously, due to the huge volume of absentee ballots, this will take a while. There is no fraud inherent in this process. Now, let's turn to the interview section of our program today. We have as our guest, Greg Razor, the newly elected District 7 Senate Representative from KC, Kansas City, Missouri, to the Missouri Legislature. Greg grew up on a cotton farm in the Missouri Bootheel, graduated with a BA in History from MU in 2000, and served as Senator McCaskill's Deputy Regional Director from 2008 to 2016. And as the District 25 Missouri House Representative from 2016 to 2020. Greg, congratulations on becoming the new Senator from District 7, and we greatly appreciate you taking the time to meet with us today.
And thank welcome. You so much. Yeah, thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, really good of you to be here. Let's jump right to the questions. In the Missouri governor's race, Governor Parsons won over State Auditor Nicole Galloway by an overwhelming margin, 59% to 41%. One of the major issues in the campaign was in Missouri was the COVID-19 pandemic. Galloway's campaign emphasized the lack of adequate response by Governor Parsons while calling for a statewide mask mandate. Governor Parsons' campaign claimed confidence in addressing COVID-19, promising continuation of a balanced approach, quote unquote. According to the KC Star, Governor Parsons in his election night address to supporters said, "This election was about preserving freedom, capitalism, and the rule of law." What is your assessment of this statement, as well as the role of COVID-19 in the Missouri governor's race?
Well, I think that there are a few things for us to break down in that question. One, the governor won by, 18 percentage points. That is an enormous victory in a statewide race. There's just no denying that. What role did COVID play? Well, I think what you saw is just droves of support, whether you support the president or not, there is no denying that he's a phenomenon. And in Missouri, he is quite popular. Not in my district, but throughout Missouri, he is quite popular, and he gets his voters to the polls. One way he did that this year was by, you know, denying the science behind infectious disease, by attacking Dr. Fauci, by telling people not to wear masks, or at least implying that they shouldn't wear masks. Governor Parson took his cue from President Trump. And I think two things that we know for certain now is, one, politically in the state of Missouri, that appears to have been the right approach politically. He took that approach. He won by 18%. We also know by looking at the number of infections that we have in Missouri, the number of deaths that we have in Missouri, that we are a hot zone of COVID infection, that that same process that was politically correct was medically malpractice. We have hospital administrators begging people in St. Louis to wear masks. The governor won't enforce a mandate. So you have two worlds, and it appears to me that the governor followed the lead of President Trump. It got him reelected, yet thousands and thousands of Missourians have been infected with this disease that has killed a quarter of a million Americans since this began in March. So that's my takeaway from how COVID affected it. You mentioned three terms also that he used in his acceptance speech. And I think you said it was freedom, capitalism, and the rule of law. And I think something we're going to talk about a few times during this interview, I'm going to go back to branding of the Missouri Democratic Party. And what the Republican Party is really good at is branding and branding us as Democrats, branding themselves, and winning elections. I would argue they're not very good at governing, but they put themselves in the position to govern. And one of the things that they've done is branded us as the anti-freedom, anti-capitalist party, which is frankly just not true. And then that third part, the rule of law, look, that sounds like a dog whistle to me, given what is going on in the country today.
Yeah, I interpreted that phrase as a response to Black Lives Matter protests. That's the way I took it.
Yes.
And is that the way you took it as well?
When I read that, that was my thought. Maybe he didn't mean it that way. I would love for him to clarify that he didn't, but I don't know how else to take it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, as far as branding goes, I think your point is well taken, that the Republicans are good at negative branding of Democrats. And I think the negative branding surrounding socialism, branding Democrats as socialists, was quite telling, actually.
Yes, I've heard from some friends of mine in rural Missouri that are Democrats who said, you know, they would talk to their neighbors and friends and say, you know, I don't think the president's done a good job with this COVID thing. I'm sick of his tweets. I don't think the governor's done a good job, but man, the Democrats are just going to turn us into socialists. And I can't vote for that. They're terrified of that word. And we have been successfully branded as socialist. And I think one of the things, you know, we need to do is reassert ourselves as the party of working class Missourians. That's what we fight for. I've been in the legislature for 4 years now in the House, and I'm on January 6th, I'm going to be sworn in as our next senator here in Kansas City. We fight for working people of Missouri every day in opposition to the Republican Party. And we need to start doing a better job of telling that story. Republicans like to tell the story of tax cuts, and they've been in charge of the legislature in Missouri for 20 years now, and look at these tax cuts that we're promising, and look at the tax cuts we delivered. I want to ask the people of Missouri, when's the last time you opened up your tax bill and thought, oh man, that's a lot lower than I expected? You haven't done that. No one in the state has done that. Yes, they passed tax cuts, but those tax cuts were never meant for you. They've never gone to you. They've never gone to me. They've gone to the wealthiest people in the state. And that has caused us to have a drain in our general revenue. It's why our roads and bridges are crumbling. It's why it is nearly impossible to afford to send your kid to college in this state anymore. They keep bragging about tax cuts, but we need to start focusing back on working class folks and saying that tax cut's not for you. We've got to get that message out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very good point. I think it's well understood on by Republicans that the national tax cut passed during the Trump administration went primarily to the wealthy, or is that understood at all or not? That's not a fair question.
Well, I think it is to the leadership of the Missouri Republican Party. I think they know what they're doing.
Okay. Well, I know that Governor Parsons did declare a special session of the legislature beginning November 5th, which was just the day before this recording, which is on November 6th, and to address state and federal funding for our COVID pandemic here in Missouri. I'm assuming you were in Jeff City yesterday to kind of be at that session. Could you kind of tell us what the legislature is trying to do on COVID at this point?
Yeah, so this, in all fairness, I've been, tough on Governor Parson the first part of this interview. This is one of those points where I'm not going to be necessarily tough. We had to rush the budget process last year in the state of Missouri. So the only constitutionally required thing the legislature has to do each year by the beginning of May is to pass a budget and give it to the governor. Because of when COVID hit and what our schedule in the legislature looks like, we only had a few weeks to construct a $30 billion budget. And we set up big empty pots where federal money could go should Congress pass bailout money. And so when the CARES Act came, a lot of that money went into those pots that we had established. That CARES Act money has to be spent by December 31st. So Missouri has to spend its allocated funds by the end of the year or we forfeit them. And I think what we're seeing is we're at a point now where we need to move some money from one pot to another to make sure that the money gets spent and it gets spent where it needs to go. And so I don't see anything nefarious going on with this special session. I think it is, we are in a unique situation with the pandemic and this federal money that's coming in. And we're going to move some of this around so that it gets spent. One thing that I think that has been disappointing from the federal level is that none of that CARES Act money allowed us as a state to use it to backfill from lost revenue. So the state of Missouri, when people got sent home from work, that's a lot of income tax that we're losing, a lot of sales tax that we lost. And so that means since we have to balance the budget, we're going to have to cut from different state agencies because of that lost revenue. And primarily, if you look at how the budget works and how it's broken out, that primarily is gonna go towards education and higher education. So it would have been great if we would have been able to use some of that CARES Act money to say, hey, we've got X amount of million left over, let's backfill this hole over here, but that's not possible.
Well, that's really, kind of a tragedy, unfortunately. As far as spending for the next few months this year, where will that money be? What sectors will that money be spent on to address the COVID pandemic we have?
I think so. When we went in earlier this week, it was really just a technical session. You have to have a day just to get everything up and running. The budget committee is meeting on Monday, and that's what they're going to decide. I think a lot of the questions around this has come from when the state distributed the CARES Act money let's say, to a county health department. It didn't actually go to the county health department. It went to the local county commission, who then distributed it. Have they distributed it? Did one county get more than we thought they needed and we can move it to another county? Or it's more of that sort of thing. It's not going to be new programs that we're addressing. Mm-hmm. It is taking the remainder of what's left and just shifting it around.
I see. You know,
hopefully this is a boring special session is what I'm getting at.
Well, if it's boring, it gets some money out there. That's important.
Yes.
You know, I am aware that the Kansas City Star indicated that the governor had a very recent phone call with rural hospital administrators and that they had begged him to institute a statewide mask mandate order. I'm assuming that their hospitals are getting, if not overrun, very, very close to full capacity. Although I don't know that for a fact, do you have any information about that phone call?
Yeah, I read that article as well, begging the governor for a mask mandate, asking at least for a plan that appears that there is no plan. I don't think any of us have ever seen a plan from the governor's office. But I think what we're seeing in rural Missouri is a couple of things. One, because it took us, you know, so long to finally expand Medicaid, we've seen many rural hospitals just shut their doors. So there are fewer rural hospitals in Missouri today than there were 10 years ago. So now COVID has finally reached in large proportion rural Missouri. You're seeing people need access to hospitals that no longer exist, which is putting strain on the ones that are still around. Those are quickly filling up their bed capacity and they're trying to get folks to bigger cities. So for example, if you're in Poplar Bluff, you may be headed to Cape Girardeau to get services now that the Poplar Bluff Hospital has closed. Well, when Cape Girardeau fills up, they're going to have to start shipping people north to St. Louis. Except St. Louis is already dealing with their own COVID outbreak and they don't have the bed capacity to take the people that are coming from Cape who are coming from Poplar Bluff. Mm-hmm. These hospital administrators are begging for help. Another problem that we're seeing that you read in that article is this whole pandemic, the whole response from it has been a hot potato of just passing it to the next person. So the president didn't want to take responsibility, said he didn't take responsibility. So he gave responsibility to the states. Governor Parson didn't want to take responsibility for it. He didn't want to shut down businesses. He didn't want to be the one, you know, to tell people they've lost their freedom to not wear a mask and protect their neighbors. So he passed it down to mayors or in rural areas, oftentimes local health departments. You read in that article, some of these local health department officials, they know the right thing to do. But if you're in a county of 10,000 people, you are now the face of, you know, socialism and Dr. Fauci and all these terrible things that they're reading online and seeing on Fox News. Some of these local health officials are literally fearful. I mean, they're in the neighborhood. You're going to see them at Walmart. You're going to see them at the grocery store. And so we need leadership to get us through this pandemic. And I hope now that the election is over, we start to see that in Missouri.
Well, you know, I think the unfortunate thing is that Missouri does have over 3,000 people who have died from COVID-19 and out of, I'm not sure the exact total. I think it's around 180,000 or so. So I think that's about right. But it's about 1.5%. So you, for every 100,000 cases, you're going to have over 1,000 deaths approximately. And that would be nationwide. And I would assume the same would be for Missouri as well. And we are coming into the worst months of COVID. Do you see any indication from the Parson administration that they're going to change course in their approach to our COVID problem?
The only indication I saw, again, in that same article that you referenced was the governor's deputy chief of staff had said to look for some new guidance to come from the governor's office in a week or two. That was about a week before Election Day. So I'm hoping now that we're past the election, we're going to see some stronger guidance from the governor.
Mm-hmm. Well, I sincerely hope so. I sincerely hope so. Amendment to change tack here a little bit. Amendment 3 was a constitutional amendment initiated by the Missouri legislature to reverse Clean Missouri, which passed in 2018 by 62%. Basically, and Clean Missouri authorized a nonpartisan demographer to create competitive legislative districts. Amendment 3 authorized the governor to appoint a bipartisan House and Senate committees to redraw legislative districts, and it did pass by 51-49%. So it will be a more political process, although bipartisan, than the nonpartisan demographer authorized by Clean Missouri. What is your assessment of the Amendment 3 effort and your sense of how it will be implemented?
Look, I think 2 years ago, we had a very straightforward campaign for Clean Missouri that said, hey, let's get politics out of redistricting and let's try to get lobbyist money away from legislators. That was the two cruxes of Clean Missouri. And immediately when that passed, you know, I mean, our districts have been gerrymandered in a way in Missouri that there are probably in the Missouri House somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, I've heard as little as 5, as many as 20 seats that have been gerrymandered to be Republican. So if you take away the partisan nature, you immediately swing those back. Now, it's not enough to give Democrats majorities, but it's enough to give us a voice. So immediately Republicans went after putting back on the ballot, essentially a repeal of Clean Missouri. And that's what we did. If you followed the process, there was a chain of court battles that continued to get appealed about how the language would appear. Republicans finally won that. And so the very first thing was on the ballot was limiting lobbyist gifts. And then there was something else. And if you made it to Section 3, you would notice, oh, we're reversing what we did 2 years ago. We're putting districting back in the hands of politicians. But how many voters, once you voted for all the elected officials and all the judges and, you know, statues and who knows what else, take the time to get to number 3? And I think, you know, they got what they wanted. So we're going to see gerrymandering for at least another, you know, gerrymandered districts for at least another decade.
Well, technically, the process to come is to be bipartisan, but I know that Democrats are really a fairly small number in the Missouri legislature. So
I think it's bipartisan by percent, close to the percentage of what is represented in the legislature at the time and led by the majority party.
Okay.
So it's bipartisan in air quotes.
Okay. All right. So it's bipartisan, but not equal.
Yes.
The thing. Well, Greg, we're just about out of time here. I think, what would you like to, in a minute and a half, what would you like to see the Missouri legislature to work on in the next year?
You know, there's a whole host of things that we need to address. We have racial inequality in our state. We have poverty issues. We have climate issues. We have all sorts of things. Missouri is having trouble doing the absolute basic nuts and bolts of governing right now. We're having trouble building roads and bridges. The Missouri legislature doesn't have the will to raise the money to build roads and bridges. We don't have the will to raise the money to properly fund our colleges and universities. These are things that 20 years ago, Democrats and Republicans didn't argue about whether or not to do it. It was an argument about how much are we going to do. And today that has changed. We've got to somehow get the state back to the point where we're at least doing the basic core functions of government. That's what I hope to work on. I wish I was coming into the Senate in a time when we could do big, great things and be super proud. But as it turns out, I'm getting to Jefferson City at a time when I'm trying to convince Republicans to build roads and bridges. And so I want to set expectations that we're back to the basics in Jefferson City, unfortunately.
Well, that's somewhat disheartening to hear, and I'm sure you're entirely accurate in your assessment on that. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. I wish you all the best in your somewhat lonely quest as a Senate Democrat to work on these issues, and I hope that you can that you and the other Democrats can work with the Republicans to get better on those two issues that you discussed, roads and bridges and education, which obviously are fundamental.
They really are. Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, thank you very much for being on the show today.